It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Well, welcome again to another week of The Next Room. I am so energized, but what's been happening with this show is it's just sort of taking on a life of its own. And I love that, because when you don't have to put effort into what you're doing, when things just naturally arrive, or people call you, or you get an email, and one thing leads to another, it seems like every single day that I have a conversation regarding this show and the book that I'm writing, it just explodes. People are saying, oh, I have someone you have to talk to, and one thing leads to another, and it's this big, fabulous web. So welcome again to The Next Room. My guest today is a friend of mine that I've known for, I want to say probably close to 30 years. John and I met in Santa Barbara when we were just kids, and I was a big music girl, so I would follow his band around town. His name is John Ferreter. He is the CEO now of a company called The Alternative. In my estimation, a super hip management production company in Los Angeles. He spent years with Octagon and the William Morris Agency prior to opening up his own shop. He's also, which I love, this is not a secret, but he's a super passionate musician, singer, songwriter, guitar, bass player. He plays with the band The Tearaways. The Tearaways play all over the world. And what's cool is The Alternative actually reps The Tearaways as well. So, John Ferreter, welcome to The Next Room. I am so happy to have you on the show today.
Hey, thank you very much, Shane. It's always good to talk to you. And you're being kind on the 30 years. I think it's been a little longer.
Yeah, I know. I do that a lot, though. Just kind of, I try to shorten it up. You know, on the old resume, it's like, oh, I've known that person 25 plus. Well, I'm a little generous with the plus. But John, I am just so I'm thrilled to have you here, because I've been watching your success, and I love when anyone lives in a space of passion, and you really do that. You really embrace life, and you know, you're very transparent too. You don't suffer fools well. You're very candid. You're very open and honest about where you are on your path. I want to talk about that. And have you always been like that, or has this been something that occurred a little bit later when you had a very interesting experience, which I want to get to, is you had a very serious medical situation. Can we talk about that? Because that's what this show is all about.
Certainly. Yeah. I'm happy to address any question you want. But I guess the way to start is, you know, I was raised as an Army brat. So I was raised, living in different places all over the world. I was the youngest of five in my family. And, you know, we just kind of learned, you know, to adapt and, you know, get along with different people, because I moved a lot. And sometimes I moved in the middle of the school year. So I really had to figure out, you know, fairly quickly how to get along with people, you know, when you're kind of showing up in the middle of the school year and meeting people and going to a lot of new schools. I think I went to kindergarten, two different first grades, you know, a different second grade, different third grade, different sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, you know, so, you know, you just kind of go through those things. It's not so much that I was outspoken as a kid. I think I was probably opinionated, and it kind of had to be to get a word in at the table, you know, with my family, with my siblings. But I think where the change kind of came in for me really had to do with seeing kind of injustice at times, or seeing where I thought people were being bullied or not being taken seriously and they were being put down. And I was usually the one to say, hey, wait a minute, give whoever it is a chance to speak. And when I started doing that, and I was young when that happened, I kind of became an advocate for a lot of different people. So people would come to me and, you know, essentially ask me to, you know, represent their points of view. So, you know, as is the case, I was a class president, many different classes, a student body, you know, president in junior high, a student body president in high school. I was a student body vice president and on the legislative council for a couple of years at UC Santa Barbara. I was always kind of that person. And it only, you know, became a bigger thing for me as time went on. And as, I mean, there were different causes, you know, to kind of fight, but it was always really based on trying to do the right thing, not necessarily trying to be right, but definitely trying to do right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that does have a lot to do with how you were raised. And like you said, you know, just trying to get a word in, you're the baby of five, I'm the baby of six. And I think babies do have a tendency to have to speak up, you know, just to be heard. So here you are, you're fighting for other people. And you do that with the alternative company. I mean, you are out there really kind of championing other people with great talent. And, you know, picking up that phone and getting things heard and making some noise with things. Tell me about what occurred when you had your medical situation. What year was that when you went through that?
2009. I had a life-changing, life-altering, definitely career-altering situation. And probably the best way to, you know, to describe it was I was a pretty active tennis player. And I was at William Morris at the time. I'd been at the agency for 18, 19 years. I took a temp job and turned it into a position where I was on the board of the company. And I was executive vice president worldwide, head of non-scripted TV. I was selling shows left and right and representing talent. I sold everything from Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which, believe me, is a different type of death, to Biggest Loser, to Project Runway, to Weakest Link, to The Man Show, you name it. I was doing kind of everything in every way. I had been involved in doing the TV specials for the Spice Girls and Hanson and the Judds Reunion. I had packaged several Garth Brooks specials. I was doing talk shows, game shows, documentaries, some dramas, some comedy. So I had this very active life as an agent. Mm-hmm. And I played tennis every weekend. I would probably play every Saturday, maybe every Saturday, Sunday, usually once during the week. I enjoyed it. It was always fun. And one day I noticed a little kind of bump in my armpit. So I went into Cedars-Sinai and they took a look at it. I remember it was on a Sunday and there was nobody there. It was one of those rare occasions where you walk into the emergency room. And literally, it's like, wow, there's no way. Great.
Wow.
And they cut the little cyst out, put a Band-Aid on it, sent me on my merry way. So 2 weeks later, I had you know, flown to England once or twice. We were in pursuit of signing a pretty big client at the time. So I was on a plane a lot. I got home and started working out, and I felt a pop in my leg. And I went and had it checked out. And they basically said, well, we think you probably tore a muscle. So go home, we'll give you some medicine and you're going to be fine. And I went home and I just kept getting worse and worse, a little bit of shortness of breath. And a couple of days later, right after we had done a big vote for a merger between our company, which was William Morris Agency, and another company called Endeavor, it was a very, very stressful time. And after the merger vote, I just wasn't feeling good. And I thought it was because I felt the company had done the wrong thing. And of all the members on our board and on all the members on the Endeavor board, as it was widely, you know, reported later, I was the one person who voted against the merger because I thought they were selling out the employees. 2 days later, I went in, or three days later, I went into the hospital to just check out kind of the shortness of breath and the pain I had with my leg. And I literally coded.
Oh my God.
I flatlined. So, you know, some people would call it a near-death experience. I call it a death experience because by the definition of, you know, my church, the Catholic Church, I was dead. And that was for a number of minutes. And through the grace of God and some good doctors and a lot of luck, it just wasn't my time. And as a result, I kind of came back to life, went through a very long recovery period. I was in the hospital for just over 2 months.
Oh my goodness.
When I finally got out of the hospital, I came out on kind of crutches and a walker. I was unable to walk because the blood clot, they discovered a blood clot in my leg in addition to I had contracted MRSA, you know, which staph infection that's virtually untreatable and kills most people. And just through the grace of God and a very good doctor, Dr. Ng, they just didn't let me die. You know, their feeling was this guy's too young. We got to fix this and see what we can do. So I started, you know, that was on April 29th, April 30th, 2009, when all this happened. And it really and truly changed my life. Because, and by the way, the change is not instantaneous. You know, you don't look up and go, wow, I'm going to change my life.
Right.
You go through several series of emotions when you're going through all of this stuff. You know, it's anger and sadness and, you know, regret and, you know, all these different things. And then what happens is you start to look up, and I kind of looked at it this way. And this is, it took a little while, but my analogy for this was, and I was 49 at this point, it's almost like if there's a God, and I believe there is a God, they said, okay, John, the first act of your life is over. Like, your life's a play, two-act play. You know, the first act's over. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to take an intermission, and then we're going to review it. And we'll let you know if you get a second act. And I think the flatlining for me was that intermission, the 4 minutes, whatever it was that I was out. And some reports are that I flatlined twice. I flatlined, came back, flatlined again. And I've had one of the doctors tell me that. And I tried to get that confirmed, and I couldn't get anyone to, you know, to officially confirm it. But that's what I was told by one of the doctors. So it was almost like they reviewed my life. And then the good news is the reviews came in, and I said, okay, look, you've done a lot of amazing stuff, and you've been very helpful, and you've done these things, and this is great. And we're really proud of you. However, there's more you've got to do. So we're going to give you a second act, but you better finish with a flourish, or else we're really going to cancel you. And that's kind of how I've always looked at it. So I've tried to make what I perceive to be the second act count. And it's made me, even though I'm the same person in so many ways, and I certainly, you know, am human and I make mistakes, you know, like everybody does, and thank God I learn from them. But you just start looking at things a little bit differently. And as a guy, you know, as I said before, we spend so much time trying to be right about stuff. You really realize at a certain point and at a certain age, it's far more important to do right than to be right. And you try to let that be what leads you through, you know, this second act.
Hang on, I got to write that down. I love it. Far more important to do right than to be right. So, John, what's next? I mean, what do you, you know, what's your concept of what happens when we do take off the meat suit and travel to the next dimension? What is it that you, I mean, I always say it's not what I know, it's what I feel. What do you feel about that?
Well, it's a great question, and your show's aptly titled, because there really is kind of a second dimension. It's like, you know, I'll tell you the first things first. You do not fear death.
Good.
When you go through this experience, you do not fear death. You do not look up and think, wow, I'm really worried about dying. Because it's almost like death is just right next to you. Kind of like when people are gone, they're not really gone. They're still around.
You
still feel them.
Yep.
You can still feel their presence. Conversely, they're kind of in the next room. So if you really want to, if you really want to tap into them and tap into their essence, I believe you can. And I went through my experience. I had a couple of friends and a couple of clients die within the last 6 months. One of whom was a friend and a client who had been staying with me for a while as he was going through a divorce, and a very famous photographer. And he, unfortunately, you know, didn't make it. He had an accident and he ended up dying. And I felt his presence for sure. You know, I definitely seen objects move and things like that. And his presence is being felt. So it's, I really do believe that, you know, you can't lose the energy. The energy just gets transferred.
Right.
So that's one of the things. And I came away from my situation not being afraid of death, not thinking, I can tell you before this happened to me, I felt ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Right.
And I sold psychic medium shows with James Van Praagh, and I did all kinds of things before. It's like, you know, my career at William Morris. And I remember thinking about it afterwards and thinking, well, you know, my actual experience that I went through really started with me passing out in an emergency room, essentially at Cedars, and waking up essentially 20 some odd days later, you know, and being intubated and seeing 19 drips going into me and having no idea what had happened to 3 weeks of my life. Only to realize at a certain point, okay, something terrible, terrible happened. And I don't really know what it is. And I just had this really bizarre dream. And I remember literally kind of looking down and seeing a guy on a table and seeing a couple of doctors working on him, seeing people being panicked that were right there, seeing my sister who was there, and looking down at the guy on the table and thinking, wow, that guy's in trouble.
Wow.
Never once thinking that that person was me. Then the next experience, which for me maybe is different for other people, maybe they're telling the truth, maybe they're not, I don't know. I just know what my experience was.
Sure.
But you see your life flash before your eyes, not in a chronological manner.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't happen like, you know, reverse Benjamin Button or something like that.
Right.
You see very different random instances of your life. And I don't, you know, it's like, why am I seeing Arnold Colville, who was a friend of mine in third grade? It doesn't make any sense to me. Why am I seeing, you know, another friend turn around and hand me a blue book, you know, some experience from like junior high? It's, you know, seeing a band at Oscars 1129. You know, it's all these things, you know, things you and I did, you know, over the past. It's seeing the microphone in the schizophrenia, you know, when I was on the air back in college, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, it's The Rock on the Coast, you know, KTMS 97.5, and then switching that dial over and going, hey, that's the most sexist song in 1963, Jack Jones, Wives and Lovers on KTMS AM 1250, weather's coming up next, you know, because we would run, as you know, we'd run two stations at the same time,
right,
and stuff like that back in the day. But I had this weird dream where all of these images came back to me.
Wow.
And I suddenly started to realize, once I realized I had flatlined, and I had gone through this experience, that what I was seeing were things that helped shape who I was and had led me to the very point where I was now.
Mm.
So I suddenly realized it's like a picture. You know, it's all those pixels that make up the picture.
Sure.
And the more pixels you have, the better the quality is. You get a chance to go back and look at each one of those pixels that make up who you are as an individual. So that was really my experience. And once I realized, I think this is what happened, and then I would talk to certain other people who had similar experiences, most of whom told me similar things, I went, okay, maybe there's something here. There's this kind of shared experience. And even though I may not have believed people in the past when they've told me some of this stuff, I'm 100% certain of what my experience was. What was most interesting were some of the psychic mediums who I had worked with over the years and who I knew. And I believe maybe there was something there.
Sure.
But they would come to me and they would say, what's it like? Tell me what it's really like. And at first I was kind of like, well, you should know, you know, you make millions of dollars a year, you know, as a psychic medium and people pay it. You're kind of asking me, but I just realized everyone's experience, I think can be different. I will tell you unequivocally, I never saw a light. I never saw shadows in the light and people beckoning to you and stuff like that. That never happened for me, but I 100% saw my life flash before my eyes. And then I almost remember when I felt like I was kind of floating and I got sucked back into the body on the table.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's sort of like what we have now in this room, you know, it's our life experience and every one of us has a different experience because of our said perception of what this is all about and the way that you function in life. You know, everybody's got a different idea about what this is. And it seems as though it was this terrible thing, but at the same time, how extraordinary for you to have this life-altering second act. I mean, because obviously it has changed you. It couldn't help but change how you go forward and deal with other people and deal with your own life. I mean, look what you're doing now. You know, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, here you are, you run your own show and you like your own show. You know, you don't have to answer to any of these big fat cats at these other agencies. You know, you're doing your own thing. So that's wild. That is just so
wild.
Well,
yeah, I used to be one of those big fat cats. And I can tell you, your jokes are a lot funnier. And your statements are much more poignant when you have a lot of money behind you, you know, the way people react to you. And then when they're not there, when you don't have the heft of that behind you, people don't laugh at the jokes the same way, and they don't look at a lot of the things you say the same way. So you got to fight it a little bit differently. I mean, there is a, I don't want to use profanity, but it's kind of a star effing attitude that people have. And I had to rebuild a lot. I had to learn a lot about myself, other people in the business when I went through all this stuff.
Did it change how you know, like your acceptance or maybe the fact of who you want in your sphere, who you want to be in your immediate, you know, grouping of people, your tribe? Did it change that? Like, are you less tolerant of BS now and like, no, I'm not going there. I don't need you.
Well, the first answer is yes, it 100% changes who you want to. And then the second part of that is you're more tolerant. You don't let people know what you think.
I can tell you, I can put
this on more of a personal basis. You and I have known each other for so long, so you understand. So one of the first things I did as I looked at my life, I did thousands and thousands of deals at William Morris. I did talk show deals, and variety show deals, game show deals, putting people on shows and acting deals and hosting deals and all kinds of stuff. I was one of the most prolific person in terms of actual deals that were booked in that, you know, certainly during the time I was at the agency.
Okay.
If not, you know, during the whole thing. But that being said, my whole life became transactional and I started looking at things in my life and it was almost like Jane, like I was riding a bike. My life was a bike and my front tire was my transactional tire. And it was overinflated. It was on steroids to the point that if I went over a pebble, the tire was going to burst. And my back tire, which was my creative tire, which had fueled me until I got to William Morris, was flat.
Wow.
And you're not going to get too far if one tire is overinflated and the other tire is flat. So what I had to do is I had to redistribute the air and get the balance back in my life. And one of the first people I reconnected with at this point was Finn, was our friend Finn,
sure,
who had been one of my closest friends for years. I was in one band, he was in another. We had played in the Tearaways back in 1983 for a little while together, and Finn was still playing music with the Tearaways. And Finn and I reconnected and reformed and forged a musical partnership, which put me back in that band in 2012. You know, I reconnected with John Ordazzo, who I had played with in 83 in the Tearaways. Even though he wasn't in the Tearaways anymore, was part and parcel of the origin of that group, you know, as much as Finn, if not more so.
Right.
And it was very important to me to reconnect with a couple of my friends, my friend Whitey, who I played with in the Stingrays for years. And I just reconnected with, you know, a couple of my closest friends and my closest friend from college and high school, who, even though we talked, my friend Greg Nako, we didn't always get together. And I made it a priority. I just said, I'm going to have balance in my life, and I'm going to balance the creative with the transactional. And if people don't understand that's who I am, and it was the creative side which drove me and made me successful, which brought me to the transactional side, which made me such a successful agent, you know, for years and kind of a super agent, power agent, and then later a, you know, big manager and a producer. If people didn't get that, then they didn't deserve my time.
There
I wasn't
going
to give it to them. Because I realized, you know, I'd look around my house and I had 50 guitars and amps and all these things set up and I wasn't playing them. And I went, well, that's stupid because other people will do it if I don't. So I
and
just
now you are
playing and rolling again.
And that's it, you know, and God love you. I mean, this is such a fascinating story. I mean, I cannot believe we're at like right at the tail end of the show. I am so fortunate, and I'd love to have you come back on. I just, to me, being able to really just kind of get into it and talk about what's next really kind of shows us about what we're doing right now. You know, the importance of being in our moment, which is what you do. You're really living in your now because your balance is back. You know, you inflated that creative tire and now you're pedaling all over the place. It's incredible. So I can't thank you enough for your candid conversation and you being open and sharing that, because that is an extraordinary story, John.
Well, you know what? I think the truly extraordinary stories are still being written. And that's one of the things that I'm very thankful for, that I have the opportunity and have had the support group that have helped me get back into it so I can do these things. And like I said, hopefully make more of an impact. If I had died in 2009 and I didn't come back, I did not want my tombstone to say, he packaged Keeping Up with the Kardashians and The Biggest Loser. So I think there's more to do.
Right. Oh, man. Amen to that. John Ferreter, I can't thank you enough. Just really, really inspiring show today. And I'd love to have you back on. I know you're a busy guy. So when you come up for air again, we'll have you come back on and we'll do this, the next room part two with you, because that would be just incredible.
Anytime you want me, I'll be there. Thank you, Jane.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Thank you for listening to The Next Room. My guest today, John Ferreter. You want to check him out, go to thealternativeco.com, alternativecompany.com. Really cool website. They're the real deal. They've got incredible people that they rep, and it's just a really cool agency. But even more so, go check out the Tearaways and download and buy their music and check them out. They are so much fun. The band is, I've known the guys in the band forever and ever, and it's just really great that they're all really kind of reaping the rewards of their success right now. So definitely check out the Tearaways. And thanks so much to my friend John Ferreter for coming on The Next Room. I'll catch you next week. We're going to have another great show coming your way.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.